Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to another segment of the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum webcast. Tonight we have an interesting guest, one of several businessmen who have started a company selling a device commonly known as a hydrogen booster. This is a device that breaks water into hydrogen and oxygen and possibly even some steam or other vaporous gas from water, and then inducts those gases into the intake manifold of a gasoline or a diesel internal combustion engine to aid the combustion of the fossil fuel, giving greater miles per gallon or kilometers per liter of fuel efficiency, and reducing pollution, and many times increasing the power of the engine as well. Let's see if we don't have our guest, Jim Cornell of MagDrive, with us at this time. Jim, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
How do you
just, do? Just dialed in. Oh, I'm alive.
Oh, great. Well, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
You are the first guest on this program who is actually the owner of a hydrogen booster device.
And so, yeah, well, I guess you could say I'm the owner-designer, yeah, something like that.
Okay, well, what I usually do is I usually ask our guests when they got interested in alternative energy technology. And so I'll ask the same of you. When did you first get interested in the idea of alternative energy?
1973.
Okay, that seems to be a very common answer on the part of individuals, especially
yeah.
In the United States?
Yeah, well, it was solar at that time, active and passive units up in the Northeast, where I designed and built a solar panel that exceeded the current models that were out at the particular time, and as it all ends up, built one of the, if not the first, solar heated and powered car washes in northern New Jersey, and did about 70 homes in passive and active heating, a dealership and a few other places here and there. And this is going back 30-some years ago.
Yeah, this is quite an accomplishment to have.
Yeah, actually, that and 35 cents, James, will not get either you or me a cup of coffee.
I like that saying, too, because it is true that many accomplishments don't go very far, especially with regard to alternative energy. I mean, I wrote a book about people who accomplished moving an internal combustion engine vehicle down the road using water as fuel, and most of those people are not known by the average person on this planet. They've never heard their name.
That's totally understood. It's accepted. You have to remember that we have been strapped to the gasoline, oil pump, whatever you want to call it, for well over 100 years.
Yes, that's very true.
And as you grow up in school, your teacher does teach you when you have a fire, you put it out with water because water doesn't burn. Okay? So if you have a fire, use water to put it out. And then, of course, when people say, well, you know, I got water in my gas and my car won't start, everybody begins to get the notion that, you know, water is just a non-combustible material, which, of course, water in essence is you and I drink it. Okay, whether it be mixed with ice and a liqueur of your favorite flavor, you know what I mean, or just out of the tap, we accept water as a non-flammable substance. Unfortunately, as water, as we know it, it is non-flammable. But if you alter the state of water, guess what? It can go boom.
Well, and then that's caused many people to say that it really is the perfect fuel, because the perfect fuel goes boom when you want it to, but when you don't want it to, it's non-toxic, non-flammable. And even when you do make it go boom, it's still non-toxic. It doesn't produce any carbon monoxide or other dangerous fumes.
Well, that's true.
It converts back to what it was, only better than before, because if you started with polluted water or contaminated water in some way, you end up with pure water.
Yeah, and all you have to do then is take your hydrogen or hydroxy cell or whatever people call them, okay, and you have to scrub it and rinse it and wash it out, because all of those so-called bios and minerals end up being left behind, and you end up with a bunch of, we'll call it goop, gunk, living stuff that's now dead accumulated in the bottom of your cell. That's why mine all have drain plugs in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does seem to be an issue to deal with. Although there are many interesting things that we can get into during this hour. But let's back up a little bit, because you said that you designed and built solar energy technology units way back when. Let's back up to what it was that actually qualified you to be inventing and building things in the first place, because this is something that I want listeners to appreciate, is that everybody has roots, and those roots can make or break us when it comes to, as you said, being dependent on others for energy. And then what are you going to do? I mean, many, many people on this planet right now have no inkling whatsoever what they could personally do to change their lot in life when it comes to energy. And you did something 30-some years ago in your case, and I'd like to know, what was it led to your ability to actually make something to bypass the conventional energy paradigm?
Well, it wasn't something that would normally bypass energy consumption in the normal sense, or production as we know it. Actually, what got me on this side of the fence is I worked on the other side of the fence where energy was created, but it was used to destroy things in mass volumes and amounts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, military. My background from out of high school, la-di-da-di-da, like everybody else, the Vietnam era, you know, the 60s, the 70s, the Cold War. And I actually worked as a ground systems maintenance warrant officer for the military. I was, you know, in the OD green, as the saying goes. They called me a mister. And I worked on nuclear warhead armaments, peripherals, closed servos, inertial guidance systems, and multi-stage thrust termination ICBMs.
Mm-hmm.
So you can thank Uncle Sam, and I do thank him every day, for giving me an education in a field that nowhere in the private sector, nowhere could I have ever attained this knowledge and this background that I was given by the military, by the way, free of charge. I just had to donate to them several years of my life, which was well worth it. And that's where I started, was in nukes. I actually worked on the stuff that blew stuff up using energy. And I said, well, if I can blow it up using energy and put a big hole in the ground and kill everything within sight, why can't I take that same energy and use it in a productive sense and use it for other things instead of blowing them up, making them work?
So this
and try to find a key.
Beating swords into plowshares, in other words.
Yeah, that's it. I think there's, not getting theologically in the Bible or something, but there's something about there about swords to plowshares or something in the Bible somewhere, isn't
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely. Yep. In
yeah,
fact,
so maybe that's it. You know, I'm converted.
The Soviet Union donated a statue to the United Nations of a man beating a sword into a plowshare. It's there in New York City. So it is a biblical passage, and it does have a modern application if people like yourself, and there are many others, really, who were trained, as you said, to participate in Cold War or, you know, technology, national defense, and they're using that knowledge and training in a good way, and that's excellent. I mean, what better application of it could there be?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was there. I was actually, once I finished my training at the United States Military Artillery Missile School in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, under the command of Major General Charlie Brown, back in the 60s, and I did my stint with Uncle Sam, you know, overseas, et cetera, so forth. I was also a military instructor for the Pershing guided missile systems, the P-1 and P-1 Alpha systems, which replaced the Redstone arsenals, the Redstone missile, which was also a much, much larger ICBM, but with much less capability as opposed to the Pershing. Of course, the Pershing now has been deactivated. The Cold War is over, and, you know, now we use the Cruise and a few of the others. But the grandfather of them all, with the ST-120 stable table, which is an air-bearing accelerometer gyroscope with a three-axis setup on it, that was actually used, the same one that I worked on, was actually used in the Apollo Mercury missions at NASA. And they were constructed by Martin Marietta at the time, which now I think it's Lockheed Martin is what they call it now. in today's sense, because the Marietta part, I think, is now gone. It's just Lockheed Martin who builds our, you know, F-22 Raptors and our F-18s, F-16s, C-130s, and stuff like that. I'm heavy into military equipment and stuff like that because that's kind of like my background, staying up with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I am very interested in the military technology. I've gone to, for instance, the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base Museum.
Oh, yeah,
it's
in Ohio.
To see what human engineering has done to create aircraft. And, you know, one of the things that fascinates me is how they've come up with you know, strange things. I mean, I never knew that the Germans came up with a little helicopter that has no engine on it at all, but a submarine would pull, and as it gained velocity on the surface of the water, the prop would spin and the sucker would go up in the air.
Yeah, a gyrocopter.
Yeah, and that they would do surveillance from the air with a submarine pulling this thing. You know?
Yeah, that's the basic technology. I mean, you have to look. All of this technology we have today, every last little bit of it, is all pre-industrial revolution stuff that was refined, brought into the early 19th century, 20th century, was all, you know, built then, and all we've done is put a brand new spanking shiny hubcap on it.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
That's all we have done, because you have to look. This hydroxy, HHO, hydrogen, oxygen, whatever you want to call this stuff, okay, everybody gives it a different terminology. The whole thing down in the basic sense of the word, you got Brown's gas, you light a match to it, it's going to go boom, okay? They were doing this same stuff, making hydrogen with iron filings and hydrochloric acid, or hydrosulfuric acid, back in pre-Civil War, and they used that alone to make hydrogen to use it for observatory balloons during the Civil War.
Yeah, very interesting.
You know, so I mean, you know, it's not new, it's just old stuff that we read in our ninth grade chemistry class or in science or wherever we were, and we were too busy paying attention to Mary Lou, checking the girl's legs out. Our hormones were raging, and we were not paying attention to what the teacher was saying, but it was all there, and we just kind of let it go in one ear and out the other. And hence, as we get older, we look back and say, well, what about what Mrs. Gross said? Does that make any sense? And then we start to investigate it, and then it starts to make sense 40 years later.
Yeah.
Because now we've grown up, the hormones are pretty much on hormone themselves, okay? And now we're paying attention to what we're doing, not what we want to do.
Yeah, and that's important. And but I think that there's a missing element. I'm 47 years old, and
God, I wish I was 47.
Well, my, you know, span of life has not been such that I can relate to being of the earlier generation, but I can remember as a child seeing American men in my neighborhood who seemed to be more hands-on when it comes to mechanical things than the men that I see around me today.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, today, the male gender as we know it, these kids today, unless these kids are out there working on one of their souped-up little rice rocket buggies, you know what I mean, one of these foreign imports, putting these kits on them and everything, that's about all you see with the kids nowadays doing that stuff.
Well, they say about mechanics in America, and I know that this is not true in third-world countries, because I've traveled to them, I've seen the mechanics there working, but here they say that mechanics are no longer mechanics, they're parts replacers.
That's right. There is no thinking between the ears, okay? If it doesn't fit, okay, well, that's the wrong part. They may have it upside down and turned backwards, but it's the wrong part because it didn't fit because they don't bother to use any of their mechanical reasoning to figure it out. It's almost like, sorry to say, but I'm going to say it anyway because I'm rude, lewd, crude, and socially unacceptable. They have nothing between their ears anymore.
Well, I think, too, it's a matter of economics. In other words, we wouldn't think of taking apart something like a voltage regulator and fixing it. But people in third world countries still do that. They still rebuild things like starters and alternators.
Yeah, because we're lazy, and we figure with our economy being a world leader, oh, I'll just go buy another one. It's cheaper. We don't want to be bothered. But then you go down there and you take that poor guy somewhere in Monterrey, Mexico, okay, that's his only car, and he can't get a regulator or an alternator. I'll guarantee you, with a coat hanger, some bubble gum, a chewing pack wrapper, and a few other odds and ends and a paper clip, he's going to get that alternator to work because he's going to use his mind, he's going to look at it, he's going to learn, and he's going to develop it to make it so it'll work because he's got that intuitive thing about him that says, you know, I have to make this work or I'm sunk with life and bread and butter to him. For us, it's a trip to AutoZone, plop it on the counter, give the guy $60, go get another one. Or take it and just throw it in the trash, go get another one.
It's true. And what this does, I feel, is it puts us at a great disadvantage when foreign countries who are selling us our polluting fuel, you know, they raise the price on it, which really could be a good thing if it wakes us up from our complacency and causes us. But the thing is, if we're not qualified to mechanically deal with an issue and come up with a solution and implement it because we're no longer mechanics, you know?
Yep.
And I see that's very true. I hear grown men whining over the situation about whether it's global warming or the cost of the fuel. Usually it has to do with the cost of fuel. People aren't really too concerned about the environment. They're more concerned about their paycheck being spent on fuel.
Yeah, because it takes it off the table.
I hear people whining about this situation, and they really there's nothing forthcoming from their mouths with regard to their own ability to do something to their own vehicle, to their own furnace at home, and so on. Nobody is even talking about the idea of bypassing these sources of energy, polluting energy.
You have to remember, we have been strapped, okay, to oil, the black gold, since back in the 1800s. Okay, we've been strapped to it. It's become our way of life. We grew up with it. Our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, and our great-great-grandparents, and maybe even another generation or two before them, has all been oil.
Yeah.
So we have been fully indoctrinated with oil for 5-6 generations now. So, you know, if you keep doing something the same way and you get the same results, okay, and you want different results, then you've got to do it a different way. And our people out here today, they're too complacent. In reality, many of the people as you see out there today, they leave it up to the other guy because they are inherently lazy. They don't want to go out there and find out for themselves, take the time and the effort. They want somebody else to do it, and then they want to jump in there and enjoy the benefits, but they don't go out there and actually go do it and find an answer, research it, spend a few dollars out of their pocket, and see what makes it tick. Now, it's easy enough to let Joe Blow down the street go and spend his money, let him do it, and then with our mindset, well, I just threw that alternator out, I'll just go down to AutoZone and buy me another one. That's the way they think. Well, why should I bother? Joe Blow's going to do it. When he's done, I'll just go buy it from him.
Yeah.
So there's no effort.
And that is what makes our economy work, too. I mean, we are all employed providing goods and services for people so that they won't do it themselves, you know?
Yeah, but our goods and services, okay, are diminishing in the technical areas as we're discussing right now. They're going away. Good mechanics today are hard to find. Parts replacers, dime a dozen, okay? Our technical skills today with the hands-on, with the wrench and the screwdriver, have gone down the proverbial porcelain throne, okay?
Yeah.
Our mechanics today just don't do it. They don't hack it, all right? The ones that are out in front, that are the ones that are hands-on, are the guys that are in development, research, the guys that are doing the racing cars and all the other kind of stuff. Yeah, they're still hands-on. But the average Joe today, nah, he's just a parts changer. We don't have the skills we had 40 years ago. When I was a kid, that's where the term, you know, shade tree mechanic came from.
Yeah.
Because you parked the car out in the yard under the shade tree in the summertime, and you changed those bearings. You changed that cylinder. You put a starter. You put new brushes into it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You did this. You tore your engine down. You re-ringed it. You know, you honed the cylinders, put the new head gaskets on it, did a valve job. You did all that 40 years ago when I was growing up. When I was 17 years old, got my first car, I was covered with grease from head to toe 7 days a week. You couldn't keep me out of it. Today, all these kids want to do is sit in front of a boob tube with some type of game inside it and exercise their thumbs.
Yeah, and that's something that I've been trying to encourage through this program is you know, the, setting a better example for young people and actually steering them into the path of hands-on, you know, tinkering with mechanical things. And, for instance, Stephen Meyer mentioned in an interview earlier this week that his father, who was a mechanic, bought the two boys, the twin boys, bicycles. First thing he did was make them disassemble them and put them back together.
Sure, why not? Learn about it.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's really great because he's telling the child, listen, here's a gift. It's a mechanical gift, but I want you to understand how it works.
So yeah.
You'll appreciate it and take better care of it.
Yeah, because I haven't seen a dealership for bicycle repairs yet. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't see a Schwinn dealership anywhere where you can take your bicycle in and get an oil change on it and a grease job and get your tires checked and all that kind of stuff and get your wheels balanced. I don't see one of those. So owning your Schwinn bicycle, which I don't even think they make those anymore either, okay, you know, you got to do it yourself. And have these kids today, rather than fix the bicycle, bring it back up to, you know, the way it was originally, put a little money into it, do a little labor, a little sweat equity. Daddy, I want a new one. Pop goes out and buys him a new one, and the kid hasn't learned anything but to use and consume, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, obviously, they have made newer devices in such a way that they can't really be serviced by the end user. It's been deliberate, perhaps, and it's also part of the high-tech electronic technology that's now accompanying every possible product.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm in the cleaning business, and you figure, well, how could they take a floor-scrubbing machine and complicate it so that a guy can't work on it? Well, they've done it. They've put circuit boards in them. They have computers that control how the water flows, the motors coming on and turning off,
yeah.
And this, that, and the other. So that, yeah, you're sort of stuck. You have to actually do a diagnostic now on a floor-scrubbing machine.
Well, yeah. That's where they got return business.
Yeah, so it is true that, you know, you can't entirely blame the younger generation for not knowing how to work on things because things really can't be worked on to a large extent now.
Yeah, the newer stuff, yeah. But
okay.
You still can get an old 1980s good old floor polisher because I used one in high school polishing and doing emulsions on floors and stripping floors, okay? And you can still get one of them with the good old AC motor in it and you still can take it apart. Put new brushes or slip rings onto it, put new bearings in it, and put it together.
Yeah.
But the kids today don't want to do that. They'd rather go out and buy the new one.
Yeah. So enter mag drive motor. Here we're living in a 2007. All of our vehicles are so complicated. Some of them even have covers now over the engine where you can't even see the engine.
Yeah, they don't want you to because it'd scare you away.
So a company opens in Georgia in the United States and says, here's a device that you can raise your hood, and if you have a little bit of mechanical ability, you can find an empty space under there to put this little device and connect it to your battery and connect it to your intake manifold, and you will experience what?
Well, you will experience on average, well, I can tell you with about 1,000 units out there now in the last 7-8 months, the general overall outlook on everything is most people are averaging anywhere between 35 and 45%. Some we do have less. We've had some that only got 15, 18. We had some that went up as far as 60. It depends upon the vehicle, the driver, of course, the geological or geographical location, if they're in the mountains or they're down on the flats. There's a lot of different things, and, of course, predominantly their right foot, okay? Everybody's different. You know, nobody's the same. We're all like snowflakes. There's no two that are identical. We may have close in twins, but not identical.
Okay, so we're talking about an improvement in fuel economy.
Yes, and you're definitely. Economy, performance, horsepower, everything.
The poor side, the poorest example would be around 15%, and the best example so far is 60% improvement?
The best one came from a gentleman in, I think it's Warrenville, Missouri, who sent me an email, which I posted on the customer's comments, copied and pasted, like I have with all the others, out of Warrenville, Missouri, who had a 5.7-liter Ford F-250. He drives 200 miles a day to and from work, round trip, 200 miles. He was getting 9 miles a gallon with his Ford, according to what he wrote. And after putting the unit in and running it for about, 2 weeks, he sent me an email, and his fuel mileage went from 9.0 a gallon to 14.78.
Wow.
That's a quote from him.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember his name. I just remember it was Missouri. I think Warrenville, Missouri is where it's from.
Now, what? How would you answer someone who says that this violates some law of physics or something? That you can't.
It doesn't violate any laws of physics. None.
Somebody who says that, well, you can't take energy from the car's battery or its alternator and break water down into hydrogen and oxygen and in any way, shape, or form improve the efficiency because you're taking energy from the vehicle's the charging system, which causes a strain on the motor. It's like a brake.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
And therefore, you're not going to gain anything.
Okay, and the very simple answer I have to that is bunk, okay? Primary reason is you're not running on HHO. See, everybody has this thing, and it just irks the daylights out of me. Everybody goes out there and, oh, run on HHO, hydroxy, this, that, all these other different formulations they call it, you know, monatomic, diatomic, blah, 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 Brown's gas, whatever, whatever. Baloney. It's not the HHO you're running on. It's what the HHO does to the inherent properties of the gasoline that it's being mixed with in the combustion chamber. That's where the power comes from. That's where the horsepower, the mileage, the performance, and everything comes from.
And that's where the name hydrogen booster comes from. It's boosting the fossil fuel that's being used by the engine already.
That's right. What it's doing is it's a supplementary fuel, like an additive is what it is. And all it does is it enhances the combustible properties of the gasoline or the fuel that you're using. In essence, causing that highly inefficient gasoline or fuel, which on some gasolines are barely 13% efficient when they come to burning to horsepower, okay, others, they can get up as high as 25% if you want to buy Avgas, all right? What you're doing is you're taking in your engine itself, the internal combustion engine, which is a very poorly designed principle of combustion anyway, but it's common and it's easy to mass produce, and it's common to everybody, and everybody can get one. So that's what we use.
In other words, if this is what everybody's got in their vehicles anyway, why not come up with a device that causes it to work more efficiently?
That's right. If they've got the mousetrap, you got to come up with a smarter rat.
Yeah.
Okay? And in essence, that's what we've done. We've just turned around. It's not the HHO. It's what the HHO does in combination with the gasoline and internal combustion engine, which forces the gasoline to burn at a much more efficient value and rate. Thus, that more efficiency out of the gasoline is what gives you the more mileage and the performance and the horsepower. It's not the HHO, it's what the HHO does with the gas.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's coming from the gasoline, not the HHO.
And so the idea is that by putting a device like this under the hood of any vehicle, and that could even be a diesel vehicle, correct?
Yeah, you can do it in diesel too.
Okay. And so what you're doing is you're enhancing the combustion of the fuel, thus using less of it. You don't have to step on the gas as far. Is that the idea?
That's right. Instead of pushing the gas pedal down an inch and a half to do 60 mile an hour, now you just put your foot on the pedal, you're doing 65 mile an hour, and you're just resting your foot on the pedal.
Okay.
You're not gouging on it because you're actually taking the power that was there without the HHO that was going out the exhaust pipe as nitrous oxides and carbon monoxide and CO2 and hydrocarbons and pollutants and stink and all that other stuff.
Unburnt fuel, unburnt hydrocarbons.
That's right. And what you're doing now is you're saying, okay, you're not getting away. I'm going to get every last little bit of you I can get. So you introduce hydrogen, oxygen, a 2-to-1 ratio, Brown's gas. You introduce that and you force that gasoline to totally burn because you're putting a fuel in there which is 3 times more volatile than the gasoline is itself. So you're forcing that gasoline to totally burn. Thus, your exhaust comes out smelling like warm, moist, white bread.
Now, speaking of that, has there been an analysis of the gases coming out of the chamber that you build and an analysis of the exhaust coming out the exhaust pipe of a car with one of these units installed on it?
Oh, yeah, right there on the website. There is a certified Georgia State dynamometer test done on a calibrated Georgia State dynamometer, all right, showing the exact exhaust out of a 17-year-old vehicle with 178,000 miles on it, not tuned up with conventional oil, put on a dyno and run at 25 and 50 mile an hour. And the results of the pollution that came out of it were less than that of a brand new automobile off the line in Detroit. And that's certified by the state of Georgia on a full certified dyno readout off their computer. And it's on the website.
Okay. Now, some people have actually said that a car in a state here in the U.S., I guess there are a few states that have what are commonly known as smog checks, where they test the emissions of a vehicle to make sure that it isn't in excess of a certain limit. I guess California's most famous state.
Yeah, CARB, C-A-R-B, California Air Resources Board. Yeah, go ahead.
Some people have said that they've taken vehicles with a device like yours installed on it to such a checkpoint, and it has failed because of not producing enough pollution.
Yeah, because it didn't make their standards. Isn't that dumb?
Yeah, that's quite ironic.
Okay, do you want to know what the name of the game is? And for your listeners, the name of the game is, now you've got the automakers, right? You've got the oil suppliers, correct? You've got big banking, correct? And you've also got the government. Is not that correct? Every single one of them are tied together, one into the other. I'll guarantee you, if you look at the personal portfolio of every single one of those senators and congressmen and people that sit in our government, they have ties to big banking, to oil, to the automotive industry, and God knows what else. So, you know, including people in the government. So they set these regulations up, like California Air Resources Board. You got to have this, that, this, that, and this in order to meet our criteria and requirements. They demand this. Problem of it is, okay, is that if you have something that supersedes their requirements and does better than what they post as, you know, their minimum requirements to be approved, and it does better than that, but if you don't want to play by their rules in their sandbox, then they take their shovel and their little pail and they go home. You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
It's either by our rules or the highway, and that's the way they are. Even though their rules, all right, and what they call for is less efficient, all right, pollution-wise, it's definitely more polluting than what you have because you didn't follow their rules and go by their rules in their sandbox. You can't play.
So we're in a situation where a government agency designed to protect the environment, supposedly, is actually hindering the implementation of a superior technology that would reduce pollution beyond what they're calling for.
That's correct. I have about 50, 60 customers in California that are running their units right now. And I have told them the same thing I just said to you and to your listeners. And I told them the California Air Resources Board, if they see the unit, they're going to jump up and down and they're going to say it's not approved, blah, 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 blah. Why isn't it approved? Because I refuse to play in their sandbox, pay their fees, give them all of the, we'll call it, credits that they so want and deserve, okay, when actually, and truth of the matter is, as far as I'm concerned, they are a bureaucracy, no different than oil, banking, and the automotive industry. And in order to play in their park, you have to go by their rules.
Yeah.
Whether you're better or not, you have to go by their rules.
I don't want to get into this, but I will make mention at this time to people, especially outside the U.S. who perhaps are not aware of this, but the Supreme Court just handed down a very interesting decision, I believe it was yesterday, with regard to the Environmental Protection Agency in this country,
mm-hmm.
and said that the EPA can enforce standards regarding greenhouse gas emissions or whatever, even if the executive branch of government tells them not to.
That's right. That was yesterday. It was a 5-4 decision.
So we won't get any more into that, but it does show that there's a bit of a conflict going on in the world and in this government with regard to who's really calling the shots about what's good for the planet. I know individual states and cities are enacting laws regarding greenhouse gas emissions, even though the federal government isn't doing so.
That's right.
They're adopting stricter standards than what the EPA would have them adopt.
Yeah, they are. And you know what the whole thing has to base the whole thing on? Okay, is money. It's all in money. That's all it is just money. You know, if I'm making money from you right now, and I've been making money from you or off of you for the last 115 years, why should I change my business model, okay, to accommodate you? Why should I? Because if I change my business model to accommodate you, and you are anti my business model, and if I change it to accommodate you, in essence, I'm putting myself out of business.
So that's
you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what's going on out there. Okay? Come on now. Let's be real here. Back in 2002, George Bush got elected. All right? Congress turned around and went to the automakers and said, all right, boys, enough of this nonsense. We've got to drop this pollution garbage on our cars by at least 10%, and we got to do it in the next 5 years. Okay? This goes back 2002, thereabouts. All right? Just when George Bush got into office. The oil companies turned around, and the automotive manufacturers turned around, and they cried in bellyache, well, that's going to cost us $5 billion, $10 billion, and it's going to take us at least 5 to 10 years to do that with all of their technology, all of their money. So what happens? They get tax credits to find a way to do it. The American taxpayer pays for it with credits, and they get it for their research and development, and they go 5 years, $5.5 billion later, and GM comes out with a little note in the newspaper, a small little ad, we have discovered a way to make your exhaust smell like warm, moist air. $5.5 billion 5 years later. And here I sit in a small little shop, my first shop, spent about $50,000, 2 years, and I'm already doing it. And you, the taxpayer, haven't given me a dime. I've got nothing. No subsidies, no grants, no nothing. Never applied for it anyway. Okay? I got nothing for about $50,000 in a small shop with maybe three or four lathes, a few bridge ports, et cetera, so forth and so on. And I do it in 2 years on 50 grand. And GM takes $5.5 billion with the rest of the automakers in 5 years, and they just come up with this.
Well, I mean, what are they offering? What's their plan?
Well, they're offering, they come up with this new hybrid system that works on hydrogen and gasoline, and it makes your exhaust warm, moist air.
They,
it was published in the local papers. Huh?
Are they basically talking about installing a booster?
No, they're talking about a whole brand new design, and it's tagged onto an automobile that's going to cost you $40,000 plus.
Okay, so let's get back to this device, because really that's what this program's all about.
Yeah.
In 1918, a guy from Columbus, Ohio, patented a hydrogen booster. It looks like just a little can with two wires going to it, and it inducts the gases into the intake just below the carburetor. So basically what you've done and what others have done in recent years is to mimic that idea. Charles Fraser, I think, was his name. Now, why is it that no automaker had taken up his idea?
It's against their business model.
Sure. And then back then, gasoline was cheaper, and we weren't as aware of pollution. But now we're living in a different era, and we're being ripped off on the fuel we use. Some people can't even afford to drive to work. They have to quit their job and relocate because of the high cost of transportation.
And you want to know what else? It's going to change. We will get weaned off of gasoline. But guess what? When we get weaned off of gasoline, we're going to get fed hydrogen.
Oh, sure.
So what are they talking about now? Rebuilding an entire infrastructure on hydrogen.
Yeah, so it's
and
good.
How are you going to get your hydrogen? You're going to have to go to their pump and pay them to get your hydrogen.
So it's the meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Of course. All he did was just change his underwear and his socks. Okay, that's all he did. You're still going to be, as the consumer, you're still going to be strapped to a pump.
Yeah.
You won't go nowhere unless you pay the man money.
As President Bush said a year ago in his speech, a State of the Union address, he said, we're addicted to petroleum. And so we're basically going to be still addicted, but to something else, but from the same pusher.
It's it. We're nothing but a bunch of crack addicts on oil. okay, is what we are, a bunch of crack addicts on oil, and all they're going to do now is just change the oil to hydrogen. And we're going to continue being our crack addicts on whatever fuel they want to give us, and we, as sheep being led to slaughter, okay, are going to keep right on paying it. Because nobody wants to go out there and actually take the initiative and do something about it.
You have. You're one of the few individuals who has started a company, as you said, on a shoestring, relatively speaking, when you consider what most businesses that are actually manufacturing something pay to do their R&D and then their production. And you've managed to not only sell about 1,000 units yourself, but you've also set up dealerships around the world now. Is that not so?
Yeah, I have New Zealand, Australia, Brazil's coming on this Saturday. Mexico is either Sunday or Monday. Dominican Republic is either Sunday or Monday. South Africa is next week. And I got a few states that also want to become licensed distributors. One is California. Another one's Illinois.
Okay. So in short, to teach a layman what one of these devices does, you're basically taking a steel canister. You're filling it with water, adding a little bit of a chemical that makes the water more conductive, so that, because water itself typically is not very conductive.
True, unless you really hit it with high, high voltages.
Okay. So you're taking regular battery voltage, which is about 13.8 volts, something, alternator output, right?
Yeah.
And you're introducing that voltage in a pulse or in a...
Both ways.
Okay.
I do it both with a what you call a pulse wave modulator, which is nothing but a square wave modulator. It doesn't have peaks and valleys in it. It has flat tops on it, okay, and valleys in the center, so it pulses. You can get the same effect from a DC motor controller as you can from a pulse wave modulator. Okay, it's variable, so you can turn it up and down to suit your particular needs for the model that you've got, and we tell everybody what to set it at for their particular model. And its size, where the, you know, the sweet spot is, as the saying goes.
Okay, so you're introducing an electrical waveform that is better for causing hydrogen and oxygen bonds to be overcome in water and producing gases that are then sucked into the intake manifold of the engine.
Yeah, under a vacuum principle only. It is not pressurized. The unit pressurizes to 2 PSI, opens the safety flashback valves, and at that point, once they open up, the vacuum side of the engine actually draws the hydrogen. It is not pressurized into the engine. It's drawn into the engine under a vacuum. It's only pressurized to get the safety flashback valves to first open up.
Okay. And are you saying then that under circumstances where the engine dies or something, the unit stops producing gas?
Yep, sure does.
So gas production is definitely linked to the motor running.
Oh, yeah. You turn on the key. As soon as you turn the key on, start your vehicle up. About 15 seconds later, you begin to start producing hydrogen, even when the unit is frozen solid. Okay, in the wintertime, it'll start to produce hydrogen. Yes, it has. Okay, we got units in Alaska that are running up there in the dead of winter.
You know, a lot of people have voiced concern about this. What do you do about a cold climate?
Yeah, they just go ahead and put the thing together. You have to remember that the stainless steel canister, which is 316L surgical, okay, has a burst pressure of some 1,500 PSI, all right? That amount of water, no matter how hard you froze it, is not going to exert 1,500 PSI, especially when you have nylon, all right, fittings on it that are tapered fitted, all right, so they compress as they tighten down, no gaskets or sealant required. And if you get anything over what they can stand, automatically the fill-and-view plug on the top and the empty drain plug on the bottom automatically blows out.
So you spend
about 30 minutes at Home Depot in the plumbing department, go get you two more fittings, okay, screw them in, and go back to making your hydrogen.
Wow.
Now, if you want to get real fancy, okay, and you want to be one of those shade tree mechanics and be with a little bit of initiative, you go to Home Depot, you go to the plumbing department, and you get some of that black foam pipe wrap that you put around pipes in the winter that kind of wraps around the pipe and then it zips up with a little zip strip.
Sure.
You get the 4-inch ID stuff. And you just turn around and you cut yourself off a length that fits the length of your gen. And you zip it up and you put a couple zip strip zip ties on it. And now your little old, you know, mini gen, hydrogen, whatever model you got, it's now got a nice little booty on it to keep it warm, fuzzy, and cozy.
Okay, but you're saying that if the unit freezes solid, because heat is generated when you turn it on,
exothermic,
it will thaw itself out.
Yes.
And start producing gas.
Yes, as soon as you get your first little pathway of water, The very first little pathway of water where the water can actually conduct from negative to positive, or actually positive to negative, because that's how electricity flows, okay? As soon as you get that first little path, immediately you start to defrost.
Wow.
Immediately.
Isn't that something? Now, let's get on another question that people often ask. What about the car's computer, oxygen sensor, the way these systems are designed to regulate the amount of gas going into the engine based on the presence of oxygen in the exhaust manifold? Don't these devices require some kind of modification, or otherwise they'll continue to dump more gasoline in when they detect the extra oxygen in the exhaust?
Nope, not with mine. Because I can show you in an actual video with a vehicle with an oxygen fuel air regulator sensor hooked up directly to the O2 sensor in a video, right on my video page. And you can see with the unit going on, you can actually see the fuel consumption go down when the unit's turned on and the gauge is turned on. You can watch it go down.
Now, why do other units require this kind of, what do they call it, an EFI control or something? Something that tricks the output of the oxygen sensor.
I don't trick anything.
Uh-huh. So why
don't
your unit doesn't require that kind of tweaking?
No, I've never had to have one put on a car as of yet. You got to remember, that's an O2 sensor, okay? That's oxygen, is it not? That senses oxygen, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What happens to HHO, hydroxy, whatever, when it burns? When it's combusted, what happens to it?
It becomes water again.
Okay, now, water is H2O in a liquid form, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It's not H2O in a gaseous form, it's H2O in a liquid form. Now, you got to remember, in a normal car with no HHO generator, with a catalytic converter and smog controls, when you burn just normal gasoline, an output of normal gasoline in the exhaust is water.
So, in other words, no one could legitimately say that you could be harming a vehicle by having water as an output from the combustion stroke.
No, you don't, because you know why? Cylinder head temperatures inside a car when it normally idles going down the road, okay, or running, idling, whatever, is normally between 350 and 400 degrees Fahrenheit on average.
Mm-hmm.
All right? You got a cup of water, and you heat a pan up to 400 degrees or 350. Take your pick. Hey, make it 250, okay? And you pour that water onto that pan heated up to 250 degrees, 150 less than cylinder head temperature. What's going to happen to that water?
Well, obviously, it's going to turn to steam immediately, isn't it?
Ah, it turns to steam. And now steam at 212 degrees is called wet steam, okay? Go to New York City. Have you ever been to New York City? Have you been there in January, February, March, December?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Do you happen to see the manhole covers in the middle of the street?
Yep.
You happen to see the steam coming out of them?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Guess what? That steam that's being pushed around underneath the city of New York from all those steam turbines and generators, that's called superheated steam. That steam is in the 400-degree temperature. Bad enough if you get hit with it, it'll take your meat off right to the bone.
Huh.
Okay. That's not called wet steam. That's called dry steam. You follow me?
Interesting. So you're saying that's what comes out the...
That's right. It's superheated at some 400 degrees Fahrenheit. It's superheated between 350 and 400, and it's not wet steam. It's dry steam. It becomes wet steam as it condensates at the end of the tailpipe and goes out into the general surrounding environmental atmosphere. So you're not passing water over the O2 sensor. You're not passing O2 gases. You're not passing hydrogen gases. You're passing dry steam across the O2 sensor, which condenses into wet steam, which condenses into water vapor, which collects and recreates water with a whole bunch of black carbon in it laying in your puddle in the garage or in the driveway from the garbage that's coming from the engine and coming from the catalytic converter and the exhaust system.
Okay, excellent information. Now, let's talk about the evolution of your product. You started out, you say, a couple years ago.
Yep.
And what changes have you made as you've gone along?
I went a long way. I went a long way from 2 years ago. When I started out 2 years ago, Okay, I was doing the usual, let's use a piece of plastic pipe, blah, 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 in my prototypes in the Series 1 before I went public. Okay? It was a very simple sewer pipe with caps on it, with some fittings on it, and some stainless steel mesh and all this other stuff inside, and they actually worked. And I was able to achieve a few percent in fuel mileage. And then I said, well, this is fine, but this is garbage. It's got to be better. So I sat there and plunk on the old computer on the CAD cam and plunk around in the shop and come up with a little bit better design, hence Series 2. Went to a little bit better plastic, higher temperatures, a little bit different configurations, and got a little bit more. And went on and on and on until we hit Series 7, which was the last of the plastic models, when I went public. And there I was getting 15 to 25% across the board. 3 weeks after Series 7 came out, we went to the initial Series 8As, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's where we came in with the autofill systems, the liquid level sensing system, and all the other stuff in the Series 8A. And then we went to Series 8B, which was then a fully automatic system that filled itself, maintained itself, and did everything on the B Series. And then, of course, after finding out what I was doing, with experimentation, and of course the late 7s and the early 8s, A's and B's, were already out and working, several hundred of them, we went to the Series 9 unit. The Series 9 unit is half the size of the Series 8 unit
now,
in an equivalent model.
Huh? Is that your current model, the Series 9?
The current model you see now out in the market is the Series 9A model, is
okay,
what you see right now.
Okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, now we have now moved, all right, with something new that has just come across the board here this last, oh, three, 4 days ago, which is the Series 9B model. It looks exactly the same as the Series 9A model, exterior-wise. But interior-wise, it has totally, completely changed. And what we used to do on a Series 9A at 9 to 11 amps, we can now do with a Series 9B at 3 amps.
Wow.
You follow what I'm saying?
Interesting.
Yes, one-third the amperage necessary at the same voltage, and we're getting the same HHO production.
And how do you account for that improvement in efficiency?
How do I account for it? Well, if I'm using 9 amps and I'm getting 4 liters a minute, and now I'm using 3 amps and I'm doing 4 liters a minute, I would have to say that looking at the power side of it, one-third the power and the same HHO production, I'd be looking probably in a neighborhood of about a 300% improvement on the efficiency.
And this has to do with electronics or cell construction?
Cell construction.
Okay, so you're using the same pulsing as you did on your earlier model.
Oh, this was without pulsing. No pulse wave modulator on it at all. This was direct current at 13.2 volts and 3 amps.
And getting 4 liters per minute.
Yes, and 4 liters per minute. I got a movie of it right here. But in that movie, I also show the inside of the unit and what it looks like. And I'm not about to do that and put it up on the Internet.
Well, now, that's understandable, obviously. And the price for your products, I believe, is quite reasonable. There's really no reason
why. It stayed the same.
There's no reason why anyone would necessarily need to try to bypass the purchase of one of your units in order to save money because, as far as I know, what is the list price on one of those units now?
Well, the smallest unit, which is a mini-gen, works from 1.2 liter. Well, actually, the smallest is the micro-mini. That's 750 cc's and up to 1.2 liter. That's only $219, and that's a complete autofill model with everything in it, like the big one.
Why would someone try to avoid paying $219 for something that's ready to go?
Because they don't want to. They think they can do it better.
Well, they're
and I encourage them. I really encourage them to do it better. I would like to have competition every way from Sunday, 24 hours a day. I would love to see everybody out there busting their hump trying to make a better mousetrap.
No, I have to tell you that I greatly appreciate and admire your openness. The first video I saw of yours where you're explaining how this, what was it, a Ford pickup?
That one actually idled on HHO. That's all it did was idle. That's all I could do. I adjusted the timing.
Yeah, let's go ahead and clarify that because people, you know, they download these things onto YouTube or something, and then you really never know where it came from and who's saying what in the background.
Yeah.
So let's clarify what that video is. This is an old Ford pickup. It looks like it's...
That's the one that has the actual dyno test from the state of Georgia on it, the first actual test vehicle, because I wasn't going to put it on a brand-new Dodge that I got in the driveway. Okay, and that test vehicle was the first test vehicle that actually went to the state, 17 years old, with 178,000 miles on it.
Okay, so in that now famous video, you're holding a camcorder and you're describing, you go inside the cab and you show that there's two tanks on the vehicle,
yep.
And you switch it to the, I've had a Ford like that, so I know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, rear tank, front tank. I switched to the front tank.
Okay, so people always say, whenever there's any kind of demonstration like this, they always say, oh, he's still got gas in his carburetor.
No.
He's still got... You know, there's still fuel in that tank and this, that, and the other. Well,
nope.
Obviously, we know that you can do this same test by disconnecting the fuel lines and so on. So,
well, yeah, you can do that, but I don't do that because, number one, then I have to go back and repurge the whole damn fuel system.
Sure. Well, another thing, all too, right? Is that if someone's going to deceive someone, they can... You can
oh, you can do anything you want.
Yeah, exactly. So there's...
You know.
The point is this. The claim that you're making in that video, in case somebody has seen it and doesn't know exactly what the claim is... You were basically idling the truck and even accelerating it, but not under load, using
not
just
under load.
The output of one of your units.
That was a supergen. That is correct. A Series 8 gen is what it was.
Okay, so it wasn't even the best unit that you produce.
Oh, no. It's not the Black Max or the Magnum silo or 4-pack.
And yet you had a V8 engine, a sizable V8 engine in an old
5-liter.
Not only idling, but even accelerating.
Yeah, I could hit it and accelerate it, but if I held my foot on the accelerator or held the throttle open, it would choke down and quit.
Yeah, well, many, many people who've experimented with water fuel technology have realized that there's a big difference between idle,
oh, yeah,
acceleration, not under load, and then trying to actually drive a vehicle down the road.
That's right. It's called work to make the hydrogen, but to make the hydrogen and make the vehicle move, which is 4,750 pounds, that is called work plus. Okay? And the minute you turn around and produce it to make it idle, but then you put a load on it, the gen itself did not have the capability production-wise in order to produce the hydrogen to do work plus.
Okay, but it sounds to me like you're heading in the direction of accomplishing that.
Oh, yeah, I'm there.
Oh, you already are there.
I am there. I am there as of yesterday.
Really? And so what is the new development?
Well, we've come up with, in our Series 9B configuration, we've done a few more little advancements on it, and we're actually now be able to do this particular unit, and we've tried it, and we can actually move the vehicle with it.
Really?
Yeah, but we haven't gone out on the interstate and get run over by a tractor-trailer truck. This only happened, you know, just yesterday, or I built the thing Sunday. All right? But it is a Series 9B, but it's a little bit more intricate and complicated than the Series 9As that are out there right now. And it also, a little bit more than the Series 9B, this is like a 9B on steroids, okay,
and again,
is what it is.
Is this straight DC or is this with a false?
This is all DC straight.
Wow.
13.2 volts DC straight, okay?
And so it has to do with cell construction.
Yeah, a lot to do. Okay, there's quite a bit there involved in it. And found a way to do it and make it work, and we've been able to actually move the car, put the car in drive, or the truck, okay, and actually drive the truck. Have not taken
the same large engine truck.
Oh, this is a 4.7 liter.
Okay.
Okay, V8, all right, and was able to actually do it, all right, and drive the truck on it, but did not take the truck out onto the interstate. Kept it back here on the local streets, 20, 25 mile an hour, to see what would happen. Because I'm not going to take a $32,000 brand-new truck out on the highway and have somebody run over the top of
right.
me because they'd quit,
now,
okay?
Let me ask you a question. In preliminary experiments that you're doing, what's happening with water consumption? What kind of miles per gallon? I know it may not be possible.
Oh, the water consumption is phenomenal,
meaning
okay?
You're not using very much?
Oh, no, I'm using a lot.
Oh, you are using a lot of water?
Oh, yeah, I'm using a lot of water,
like for
okay?
Instance, is it gallons per mile or is it miles per gallon?
Well, I haven't gone far enough to be able to tell you miles per gallon, but let me put it to you this way. On a one-gallon tank, all right, that was filled up to the top, I drove, I would say, at maximum, maybe, okay, 5-6 miles at the most.
And you depleted it completely?
Half of it was gone.
Okay, so you were getting approximately 10, 12 miles per gallon, is that it?
About that, and that's what the engine gets without a hydrogen generator on it, according to the engine's computer, the onboard, which comes on the Dodge Rams, All right, it averages 12.2 to 13.4 miles per gallon on regular unleaded fuel.
Okay. So you're
so that's where I was.
The same on the output of your hydrogen generator.
Close, very close. But again, I did not take it out, try to lay rubber with it, become a mad hatter, crazy man, burn rubber, skid around corners, and take it out and drag race somebody.
Yeah, but what would it do in a smaller vehicle with, say, a one-liter engine, a little Geo Metro or something?
I have no idea, because I don't have one.
Right, but apparently, if it's capable of cruising around the neighborhood in a V8, a four-liter V8, then it would surely bring about a full performance in a smaller engine, wouldn't it?
It probably would, okay. But until I have a chance to put one in one of the test vehicles, which I have several here, from people who have been with me from the very beginning at Series 1, when I have somebody that we can actually throw one in there and actually take it out and really try it, seriously try it, feel comfortable with it on the secondary roads, and then take it out onto a two-lane road and get it up to 45, 50 mile an hour and see how it acts. So, you know, in case we die on the thing or it quits on us, we can dive for the shoulder of the road so we don't get run over, because that's hard to do on an interstate, okay? Big trucks have a tendency to want to go over you. You know, once we find that out, then we'll go a little bit farther and a little bit farther and a little bit farther. There's all kinds of stuff going on here, but, you know, we're doing it. And we're making it work, but that doesn't mean that you're going to go to the website and you're going to order one and now throw out your gasoline credit card and drive it down the road. It ain't going to happen. There's a thing called product liability. You know what that is.
Right.
I can't go ahead and put these out on the street right now because people are going to take them. Here's an example. I had a guy call me up from your state, who bought a Supergen. Put it into his vehicle. I'm not going to mention names or type of vehicle, all right? And immediately put a Supergen into his vehicle, a standard production model, all right, into a large SUV, and disconnected his fuel lines, and then called me up on the telephone and told me, my vehicle won't start.
Huh.
And I told him, I said, well, okay, your vehicle won't start. Have you got a good battery? Did you tune it up recently? And he goes, yeah. He says, it's relatively new. I said, okay. Do you have gas? He says, well, yeah, I've got plenty of gasoline. I said, okay, then why won't it start? Well, I turned my gasoline off, and I'm trying to run it just on HHO.
Huh.
And I told him, I said, what do you mean you're trying to drive your car, run your car on just HHO?
He wasn't paying attention to your product claims.
Not at all. Not at all.
But this is what all business people run into. Anyone who sells a product has customers that don't pay attention to the...
They don't read.
No.
They don't read. They want you... I'm going to be honest with you. One thing that irks the daylights out of me, I will work with you and I have with customers who have had trouble getting it installed because their mechanical abilities were, we'll say, limited in some respects. I have spent long distance calling them on the phone 2 and 3 hours. On the phone, and I have people that were here listening to me walk them through setting it up. 2 and 3 hours worth of tech support on the phone. You call me from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. If I'm here, I answer the phone. If you get the voicemail means all the lines are busy.
Yeah.
Since we've been talking, I've already had 3 calls come in. But this line is busy right now, so they're going to get the voicemail. I'll call them back later. Okay, and I spent 2 and 3 hours with them, walking them through it from taking it out of the box to getting it to run.
Wow.
In support.
You're a very rare business person.
You know, because it's got my name on it. All right? No problem. But then I get some jamoke, okay, who turns around, does not read the website, does not see the bold print, does not look at anything, all right, goes out and just click, 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 buy, 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 gets it, and then puts it in his car and calls me up and complains, well, he's got no gas in his car, and he's trying to run on HHO.
Yeah.
Now, whose fault is that?
Yeah, so what you're saying is that product liability is such, and we live in such a litigious society,
yes.
The person who comes up with a device such as yours cannot necessarily bring it to the marketplace without very serious considerations.
Oh, yeah, because I'll tell you what, there are intelligent people. There are smart people. There are clever people. And there are some people that are just downright ignorant and dumb.
Well, and then there are people who would be better off hiring someone else to
yep.
accomplish the installation. And
oh, yeah.
maybe people, you know, there are people who don't change the oil in their cars. And those
kind
of people perhaps should not have a hydrogen booster at all.
That's it. And I've had people like that have ordered units from me and then called me on the phone after they ordered it within a matter of hours to days, okay, and it's on the production line. And then they start asking me all kinds of questions, okay, that the answers to those questions are right there if they bothered to read it. But they don't want to read it. They want you to hold their hand and walk them through it. And in the meantime, somebody who really wants to do it, who is reading the instructions, who may be having some difficulty, needs the help, they can't get to me because the person who is too lazy to even bother to investigate what he just bought is tying up the whole process. And people like that, and you all can hear me plain, straight, and clear, your order gets canceled, your money is refunded, and we are done.
Yeah, and that's
because
right.
those few are not going to damage and hurt the ones that really want to do it.
Yeah, well, it's your right to choose your customers based on their ability to actually install your product.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, they're going to come up with all kinds of stuff. You know, I'm this, I'm that, I'm this. You know, call me all the names you want. You know, sticks and stones will break my bones, but all your names and insinuations, heck, they don't bother me. I've been called worse, I am sure. You know what I'm saying?
I have to say that I greatly admire your efforts in such a short time. That's what's so surprising. With such a minimal investment and in such a short time, you've come out with a product that is now available to people anywhere on Earth that will reduce pollution. That's the most important thing. But it
oh,
will
yeah.
save them money. And at the low prices that you sell these products for, a person can justify getting one and having it installed on their vehicle. And in not too long a time, they'll have actually paid for that purchase in their fuel savings.
My average customer, to be honest with you, James, my average customer, installed correctly and properly, can put a unit in with normal driving where they burn a tank and a half a week going back and forth to work, which is about the normal. They can actually pay that unit off in savings in under 90 days.
Amazing.
Okay, under 90 days they can pay that unit off. Now, I am no magic guru. I'm no mad scientist. I'm just an American, and excuse expression, I'm damn proud of it, okay? And all I'm out to do is to find a better way, because every single time you buy a gallon of gas, that gallon of gas is in that barrel of oil. That barrel of oil came from some place where people don't like us, and on the other hand, every dollar we give them, it's getting shuffled through back doors and back ways for the people that don't like us who want to see us disappear to buy bullets for them so they can kill us.
Yeah. Well, everyone has different reasons for wanting to pursue this technology, and what you just stated is really a very real motive for many people who are involved in the water fuel movement.
Yeah. You know, they want to live if they want to live in Sharia law, 7th century, then fine. They can go sleep in their tents, make love with their camels, one hump or two, I don't care, okay, eat pomegranates and dates and be happy out in the desert tending their flocks. If they want to live in the 7th century, go right ahead. But me, I live in this century. Me, I'm an American. And yes, I'm an American who is not politically correct, because political correctness is only a polite way of not hurting somebody's feelings when they're a total, complete ass or idiot.
Yeah. Well, even though many people may not agree with you, people from other countries and even people in this country, it was important for you to state your position on things so that people have a better understanding of who you are as a person and why some of the policies and so on that have appeared on the Internet, some of your other businesses and whatnot. People have to understand that we don't all march to the same beat, and we have to respect others for their views, even if we don't agree with them.
Yeah.
The point is that I definitely admire the way that you have created this product and made it available to people at an affordable price. It's a product that is good for this planet. It's good for the young people that are breathing the air and their children and their grandchildren. And I think that's very commendable. And I think it's very exciting that you actually have now something that can totally replace fossil fuel. And again, people.
Well, I can subsidize it. I can subsidize it when it comes to the general public now. I didn't say replace it. I have not put that out there.
No, absolutely. I understand. But to know that the potential exists to have a vehicle that runs entirely on one of your units and completely does away with this filthy wasteful and unnecessary fuel that we've all been addicted to for so long.
Yeah.
It's very encouraging. Now, let's get the website out because we've run out of time. For someone to go to your website and be able to order one of these devices, what do they go to?
Well, if they want to order one, they want to talk to me, and you got to remember, I'm a very mad person, as you can tell. I'm mad. I ain't going to take this no more. I've had enough. That's my attitude, okay? So that's the way I come off because I'm ticked off about this whole situation. We should have been weaned off of this stuff 30 years ago, and we haven't been because people have been lackadaisical. So somebody's got to do it. But if they want to do it, they want to see it, they want to communicate, they want to join our forum board, they can. It's on the website at fuelfromh2o.com.
Okay, so that's the webpage that people should go to in search of a MagDrive SuperGen.
Yep. Or any of the models we got, from the Black Max to the Magnum, okay, both the 4-pack and the silos, to the SuperGen, and all the way on down to the Maxi, the Hydro, the Mini, and the Micro Mini.
Okay, and just to, without going into detail, but you mentioned Black Max. We should mention to those who drive diesels that that is a booster designed for a diesel engine.
That's for stuff that is 7 to 13 liters in size. In fact, I just shipped one out, to believe it or not, to a gentleman up in Maryland who's on the Chesapeake Bay who has a very, very large boat. And he's going to use that on his boat because his boat burns 200 gallons an hour.
Wow.
So if we can take that 200 gallons an hour and we can take 25% off of that 200 gallons an hour on that big motor, well, that's 50 gallons.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking
and 50 gallons at $2.89 a gallon, say 3 gallons, that's $150 an hour that the captain of that boat does not have to shell out into the tank to take his trawling people, you know?
What is the cost of that Black?
Oh, the Black Max? That one's not cheap. That's $2,200.
Yeah, but still, for what it does.
Well, yeah, he takes 10 parties out, okay, and he's paid for it.
Yeah, amazing.
Okay, well, if you go with the Magnum, you're looking $1,600. A Magnum is 4 Supergens, is what the Magnum is. It's 4 Supergens all tied together.
Uh-huh. Well, we've covered a lot of ground, and yet there's so much we haven't talked about. For instance, the very name of your company, MagDrive, actually has nothing to do with hydrogen from water. This is all about a magnetic motor that you came up with. Is that not so?
Yeah, I built a magnetic motor. That's how I got started, why I bought all the machine equipment. I was actually trying to get into that for electrical generation and production.
And we're talking about a motor that once you get it spinning, it spins on its own without any power input.
That's right. And I built one. I built one successfully, and I have not been able to duplicate it yet. I've been pulling my hair out. I'll bet you my hairline receded 3 inches, okay? I put it together, done down to the thousands of an inch, machined. Went out and bought all the machining equipment to do it, followed it to the letter of the law. Everything was done exactly perfect. Put it together, spun it up, it took off, and it did take off. It took off so fast that the magnets, I use nibs, nickel borons, the magnets inside the rotor assembly actually came out of the rotor assembly from the centrifugal force of the rotor spinning, went through the stator casing housing, through the entire housing, and stuck in the roof of my shop.
Amazing.
Yeah, well, it was like being in a small arms firefight, and everybody hits the deck. Okay? And there was no way to stop it, and of course, once it became unbalanced, which it did, it just literally tore itself apart.
So you're here to tell people that it is possible to create a device that did you turn it by hand, or how did you initiate the turning of it?
I actually just gave it a start with my hand.
Uh-huh.
And I just held it between my two palms and spun the half-inch shaft, OD shaft, and it started to go, and it started to spin up.
And it went out of control.
And it just took off on me, and I could not stop it, and the thing just took off, and then it finally came apart, became unbalanced, and totally, absolutely destroyed itself. And unfortunately, since that time, I have tried to duplicate that a numerable count of times that I've tried to do it, and have not been able to get it to do it again. I don't know, maybe Saturn, some of these guys, was aligned with Jupiter in the house of Venus or something. I don't know.
Well,
but I have not been able to duplicate it, so therefore, Do not take it as seriousness. Do not take it as reality. Take it all as hyperbole, superfluous information, because unless it can be duplicated time and time and time and time again, it's not worth the effort, the trouble, or the time spent to put into it.
But it's still a very, very interesting experience and worthy of another show. If you're
willing. It's one I don't want to repeat.
Yeah, but perhaps we could get together again and talk more about not only what that particular experiment you did, but what others have done, what you know about other such, because obviously you had to have heard or seen other similar.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the folks up there at the New Energy Congress, Sterling, I forget the gentleman's last name.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, nice fella. Never met him, but I've seen some of his videos and stuff like that. Very intuitive, very sharp, okay? Seems like a real straight shooter, all right? And, you know, he had one he duplicated from overseas from somebody's plans, and he was able to make it run, but, of course, it would spin down. It wouldn't continuously run. Okay, but he made a true valid effort, and I mean, they spent some serious money in that machining, because I looked at that aluminum, and whoever did that job was a master machinist. He was good, okay? I mean good, because I looked at that the hardware he built, and it was phenomenal. The work that went into it was just phenomenal. He deserves all the kudos he can get as a machinist.
Well, it's nice to know that people like him and people like yourself who know something about machining and who have some hands-on mechanical ability are making a real contribution to helping mankind, helping this planet, and making it easy for people to adapt the technology, because the price is very reasonable. I mean, one thing about new technology is that people tend to want to rip you off when they sell you a new device, a new...
My people, uh-uh, no. You have, from the day you get it, 30 days to install it, okay? 30 days you've got to install it. It's under 100% warranty guarantee, 30 days. Get it in there, get it started, install it, try it. If you don't like it, call me up. I give you an RMA number. You send it back, I give you back your money, period. Now, if you take it apart, you alter it, you change it, you destroy it, well, just like if you went and bought a brand new television set and then took it apart in the living room to see how it works,
You
bought it, okay? Come on, let's be realistic here. You know what I mean?
No, you're more than fair, and I appreciate that. I would say that people listening to this have no reason not to get one of your devices. If they're thinking about getting a hydrogen boost device, this is probably one of the best and cheapest that's available.
Well,
and
I'm here.
I'm sorry?
I say I'm here.
Yeah.
Okay? They can call me from 10 to 10, 6 days a week, because my day starts at 10 in the morning, and I'm done at about 3, 4 a.m. every day, 6 days a week.
Wow.
That's the way it is. You can call me. I've had people, if they're listening, they can call and tell you. They've got your phone number. They can tell you, okay, they've called me at 11, 12 o'clock at night Eastern time, because they're in California, and I've picked up the phone. Okay? I've been at home on Sundays, and the phone forwarded into the house on Sundays, and I can hear them leaving a message, and I can hear the distress in their voice because they're confused, okay, and they're having a little problem. And still, even though I don't take calls on Sunday, I will pick up that phone, and I will work with them to get it done.
Well, that is unheard of customer service. But you
know,
we do need to go. Our time is up, and I appreciate very, very much your having shared this information with us. Please state your web address again so people
can... Yeah, they can go to fuel, F-U-E-L, from, F-R-O-M-H, like in Henry, to, the number two, O, little o, lowercase, not the number zero,
uh-huh.
fuelfromh2o.com. They can go right there. There's videos, there's slideshows, there's comments from customers. Even some of my customers have left contact information where they can even talk to them and reach them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't put lies up on the website. Everything on that website is copied and pasted in customer comments directly from the customer in their email to me.
But the point is that a person can purchase one of your units, and in normal driving, they can expect to recover the cost of the unit in a few months.
3 months on average. A normal person burns tank and a half a week. He's looking 3 months.
And he can
pay that unit off.
While doing so, they will be contributing less pollution to the atmosphere.
And saving a dollar or two or three.
Exactly. Well, listen, thanks so much, and let's get together again, because there's a lot more we could be talking about.
You're going to want to call me, I'm telling you. You're going to want to talk again when you see the Series 9B with the new configuration, okay, the one that's on steroids, When you see the videos of that on the internet, because I believe we may have cracked that holy grail, I'm not saying we did, I believe we may, okay?
Now, have you established pricing on that unit?
It's going to be the same price.
Which will be?
It's going to be starting from $269 on a mini gen to the $399 on a super gen. I'm not raising the price.
Well, that's
no way. I'm not raising the price. That guy who's working for $400 a week take home, feeding a wife and two kids and a dog, maybe a cat and a goldfish, he can't afford to pay more and more and more money. If he could afford to pay more money, then he wouldn't need the device. He could buy his gasoline.
Well, it's mind-boggling economics in this day and age of greed and
It's an old thing, briefly. If I get a pizza pie on Sunday, and I've got to live on that pizza pie and eat all week, do I sit there and eat it all on Sunday and starve for the rest of the week? Or do I more or less conserve and save and only have one piece of pizza a day, and maybe Saturday, when it's about to turn green like the anchovies, have the last two pieces together, okay? I would rather have a little piece at a time, one after the other, one vehicle at a time, than to go out there, charge some astronomical price, make them think that it's gold-plated, okay, and then they end up becoming disappointed. Ain't going to do it.
Well, once again, I thank you so much for having shared this information and for you know, being the business person that you are, because I don't think any customer could ask for more.
Well, they just got to call me. I'll be glad to talk to them. But please ask me good questions and read the website first. That's all
okay.
I ask.
Well, you've made it very clear that people need to be proactive in researching the information before asking. And that's
be an informed consumer.
Okay.
When
well,
you're informed,
up,
you're educated.
Rob. And, again, I thank you, and we'll look forward to talking again.
All right. Well, you have yourself a good one. Nice talking with you. Nice talking to whoever was listening. If they want to call me, they can reach me at 770-783-1678.
Thanks so much, Jim. And thank you for tuning in with us, and I hope this has been instructive. I know it has for me, and we'll look forward to presenting more information on fuel from water technology in the future. Thank you.